Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Hey, what do you got going on the next couple of weeks? Because the economy? Oh, it's going to be pretty busy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday, today, 28 November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. And we begin today with a brief perusal of the macroeconomic calendar over the next 10 days, 2 weeks or so. We get an update on inflation on Thursday. The Federal Reserve's preferred measure, personal consumption expenditures, PCE. Remember that when you hear it. Then Friday, there's the November jobs report. Those are both, of course, biggies. Government funding runs out on December 16th. Don't sleep on that one, of course. And then next week, just after midnight on December 9th, the transportation gears of this economy may well come to a screeching halt. And I'm thinking that screeching sound you hear in movies when trains stop suddenly. The Washington Post reports today that the White House is getting set to ask Congress to do something to put off a railroad strike that looms after 3 years of negotiations. Rachel Premack is the editorial director at FreightWaves. They cover logistics, and we've gotten her on the phone for some context. Rachel, it's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
What do you make of the fact that these negotiations have been going on for almost 3 years now? There was a deal, and now there's not a deal, and there's some peril here.
Yeah, so these rail workers are demanding for not so much higher pay, but more vacation time, more opportunity to take sick leave. And that's really not something that the rail companies at this point are willing to budge on.
What's been going on in railroads the last number of years that it came to this kind of labor situation where these engineers and drivers and everybody can't get time to go see the doctor?
Rail companies have been pushed to, get those better profit margins, better performance on Wall Street. And as a result, they're trying to use as little equipment and staff as possible to manage the same or even more amount of car loads. But it really came to a head during the lockdowns in early 2020. We saw those railroad companies lay off considerably more workers trying to keep profitable and keep operating. And as a result of that, when freight volumes started to pick back up again, they were caught really flat-footed. So they had almost the same amount of carloads as they would have in typical times, but far fewer staff.
So here we are now with, give or take, depending on the labor organizing unit that you're paying attention to and what their strike deadlines are. But we've got a week, 10 days-ish, until things could go south. What does it look like if the railroad system fundamentally goes on strike?
Let's say we have a strike of 1 to 3 days. A lot of chemical companies, fertilizers, coal, energy, these sorts of industries that really do depend on rail, they'll be prepared. They'll have extra breathing room to make sure that, the lights don't go out or that wastewater processing plants can still provide clean drinking water. But if we see a strike that lasts for weeks or longer than that, that could be pretty perilous to society at large, actually.
There are those who are going to say, well, can't we just put it all on trucks? I mean, trucks are a huge part of the logistics infrastructure in this economy. Can't we just do that?
Well, unfortunately, no. The trucking industry doesn't have enough capacity to move everything that's moved by rail on truck. That would also really be quite disastrous for inflation because moving commodities by rail is much cheaper than moving it by truck.
So we had 3 years of negotiation. We've had arbitration. We've had the White House and a presidential emergency board. Secretary of Labor has been involved. And here we are a week away. Now what happens?
Well, we still have a cooling off period until December 9th at 12:01 a.m. There's one smaller union that could potentially strike as soon as December 5th, but December 8th, December 9th, those are really the dates that I'm watching closely to see what happens next.
There is also the possibility that Congress could get involved, right? But I don't need to point out that Congress has a tough time agreeing on almost anything without a great deal of pain these days.
Absolutely. So Congress can intervene to impose an agreement if these two sides remain deadlocked, but it's uncertain whether that would actually happen. We do still have a Democratic majority in Congress, so the likelihood of them making this sort of pro-business, perhaps anti-labor type of move, that doesn't seem quite likely. On the other hand, if the country's at a standstill, in my opinion, there's no choice but to make some sort of agreement if this is going on for weeks and weeks.
You are the subject matter expert in this conversation. Spitball it for me. What do you think is going to happen?
I would say it's likely we will see a 1 to 3 day strike. That's what the experts are telling me. That is my most likely guess. The last time we did see a strike was in the early 90s. It was also a matter of a few days of a strike. But even a small strike like that, it is incredibly disruptive to the whole nation.
Rachel Premack is the editorial director at FreightWaves, talking a rail strike and whether that's going to happen or not. Rachel, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time and your expertise.
Yeah, thank you.
On Wall Street today, look, take your pick. Traders were wary after those protests in China over the weekend, or they didn't much care for a couple of Fed officials saying today, yeah, no, interest rates are going to keep going up, or it could be both. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The Black Friday numbers you have heard already, probably $9 billion spent by American consumers the day after Thanksgiving. That's according to Adobe Analytics, which keeps track of that kind of thing. $11.2 billion is the spend estimated for today, Cyber Monday, as it has been so branded. And while we are buying stuff, more of us are paying later. Adobe says there's been an 8% increase in buy now, pay later plans so far this month as compared to last year. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more on that.
Ianette Rodriguez is a New York native. She lives in Brooklyn with her four kids, who range in age from 4 to 36. And the older ones?
They're all grown over 6 feet tall. They can meet me at a house and home in a heartbeat.
Rodriguez says her monthly grocery bill is around a grand. And at the start of the pandemic, she started using Buy Now, Pay Later to spread those food bills over the course of 6 or 8 weeks. She also uses it to buy things like medicine and gas.
You save a lot of money versus the interest because a lot of credit cards, they have very high interest rates.
Some Buy Now, Pay Later services charge simple interest, which means it doesn't compound. Others charge a fee to merchants. Many of the companies started as a way to help people who might not have much money or credit make big-ticket purchases like a mattress or an exercise bike. But Matt Gross, with the Buy Now, Pay Later company Affirm, says it makes sense that people are using it for other things, too.
You don't have to put it all on the card and then end up paying interest on your coffee and your groceries and your gas because you're not paying off the balance in full each month.
Like any kind of credit, there can be downsides. If you don't pay, some providers will charge late fees, cut you off, and it could also hurt your credit score. Michael Tiano is a senior director at the credit agency Fitch Ratings.
If you pay it on time and everything, you know, goes smoothly, you may not necessarily get the credit for that in your credit score. But if you don't pay, it could end up being a negative.
Which is why New Yorker Ianette Rodriguez, a former bookkeeper, carefully records everything she owes and to whom. She writes it all down in a big logbook, and she says she's never missed a payment. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
AI. Artificial intelligence is everywhere in this economy right now, and along with all the conveniences and advantages that AI brings, so too have come the biases and the problems, which is why starting next year, companies in New York City are not going to be allowed to use AI in hiring decisions unless their systems have been audited to prevent that kind of bias. AI can, of course, help narrow down a big applicant pool, but it can also disproportionately exclude certain groups, like women and people of color, applicants without college degrees, even when they are perfectly well qualified for the job at hand. So the search is on for solutions, as Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino reports.
Growing up in Michigan with a dad who spent four decades working for General Motors, Saray Primus had a clear vision for what a career meant.
You can advance in a company that's going to invest in you.
But she says for most of her working life, all she had were jobs.
You don't really go further in the position that you're in. So, you know, you're just there to do that job and go home, do it all over again.
Or, in Primus's case, go to another job. She's made it to manager, sometimes in two or three different jobs at once, at a car dealership, a fast food restaurant, and a clothing store. But she never made it to the next level up, she says, because she didn't have a four-year degree.
I was passed up for promotions.
It's sometimes called the paper ceiling, an invisible barrier to upwardly mobile jobs that excludes people who didn't go to college, which is about two-thirds of the U.S. workforce and an even greater share of Black and Latino adults. An increasing number of employers have vowed to do away with degree requirements, but the bias is often embedded in the software companies use to screen applicants, says Shad Ahmed with the nonprofit Opportunity at Work.
How do you create a job description that's truly skills-based, that doesn't fall back on degree requirements? Our systems haven't caught up with that.
The artificial intelligence typically used to filter resumes doesn't just look for degrees. It zeroes in on specific schools, previous employers, and titles, which likely had degree requirements, or keywords like collaborative synergies that only someone who went to business school would know to use.
It's not necessarily the algorithm's fault that they're biased. Those algorithms are trained based on history and trained by humans. And unfortunately, our labor market historically has used degree requirements as a proxy for skills.
So Ahmed's organization created its own hiring platform called StellarWorks, which aims to do away with those biased proxies and hone in on actual skills. Mohan Reddy is the co-founder of SkyHive, which built the algorithms that power the platform.
So a job is a collection of skills. A person is a collection of skills.
SkyHive uses artificial intelligence, tested constantly for bias, to find patterns in those skills in a more objective way than humans can.
When people write jobs, write the job descriptions, they're very biased.
They often include coded language that ends up being exclusionary and wish lists of nice-to-have but unnecessary skills, some of which could easily be learned on the job. Meanwhile, non-traditional candidates often overlook the valuable and transferable skills they've gained in seemingly unrelated jobs. StellarWorks uses SkyHive to make those connections.
That opens up new career pathways, new opportunities.
Like, for instance, the opportunity for someone with lots of retail and customer service experience to use her communication and team leadership skills as a supervisor at an automaker.
Now I have a career and not just a job.
About 10 months ago, Saray Primus used StellarWorks to get a full-time position as a group leader for powertrain manufacturing at General Motors. It's one of more than 100 companies using the platform to fill jobs that otherwise might have required degrees.
I went home one day and I went in my room and I actually kind of cried because, you know, I had my dad passed away and I was able to stay and look up in the heavens and tell my dad, I have a career, Dad, I did it.
Now that she's no longer working three jobs to get by, she's using her free time to pursue a college degree in business. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I don't think we're ever not working on Christmas. It's the Super Bowl.
Oh, it's always the holiday season, isn't it? First, though, let's do the numbers. Yeah, the Wawa's today for sure. Dow Industrial's down 497, 1.4%, closed at 33,849. The NASDAQ shed 176 points, almost 1.6%. 11,049. The S&P 500 off 62 points, about 1.5%. Finished at 39.63 there. Apple faded 2.6% today. There are concerns that unrest at its biggest supplier, Foxconn, in China, which we talked about, could bring major slowdowns to production over the weekend. Of course, tens of thousands of people in that country have been protesting the strict COVID-19 lockdown procedures. Protests also pushed down energy stocks on fears that unrest could disrupt Chinese industry and depress fuel demand. Global Factory, all of that. ConocoPhillips gave back 2.3%. Chevron down 2.9%. Bond prices went up. Yield on the 10-year T-note thus went down 3.68%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. With the pandemic, as we have talked about countless times, came a lot of changes to this economy in logistics and in retail. Also in finance. Apps like Venmo and Cash App have gotten a big bump the past couple of years. But with new fintech have come new opportunities for fraud. And now scams on those peer-to-peer platforms have come to the attention of federal lawmakers and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The Wall Street Journal reports that Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and J.P. Morgan and some others are beefing up security on a platform that they own together. It's called Zelle. And to boot, figuring out ways to reimburse customers who do get scammed. Marketplace's Savannah Marr takes it from there.
Peer-to-peer payment was already picking up steam when the pandemic helped convince holdouts, like John Bizzard, lead security analyst for Javelin Strategy and Research.
I remember very distinctly paying someone to work on my home during sort of like peak COVID times. He was willing to come in and do the work, but he wanted a contactless form of payment.
Convenient. Problem is, the same features that make a peer-to-peer platform easy for consumers
also make it enticing for scammers and fraudsters.
Rachel Gittleman with the Consumer Federation of America says bad guys use tried and true methods of tricking people. But unlike, say, a credit card payment, there's no delay on the transfer. And by the time we realize we're being played,
it's too late and there's no recourse.
News that scammed Zelle users could soon be reimbursed by the banks that own the platform comes as the industry faces calls for tighter regulation.
I would say it's timely.
Sheridan Trent with the Straw Hacker Group says volunteering a fix could help build consumer trust.
You only have to kind of Google it to see that it is becoming, you know, more and more known. There's been more cases that are highly visible.
Cases of customers transferring money to people who aren't who they say they are. John Bizzard says we should be picky about when we use peer-to-peer payment.
My great example that I always give is, have we had dinner across the table from each other?
If the answer is no, he says, he'd think twice about sending you money through an app. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
It's been getting harder for a good long while now when you call customer service to get a real live actual human person on the phone. You can say agent, agent, agent until the cows come home, but still, you get nothing. And now, if you're dealing with Frontier Airlines, you won't be able to talk to a person at all. The low-cost carrier has fully transitioned, it says, to digital communications. So if your flight's been canceled or you need to rebook or your bag's been lost, It's online or nothing. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
Frontier still has a phone number. There's just no one answering it.
We make it easy to find what you need at flyfrontier.com or on our mobile app.
Maria Fleming and her husband did not find it easy. Frontier lost their bags on Friday on a flight from Chicago to Orlando. They tried the phone, which pointed them to the website. Then Fleming's husband tried email, which pointed him to a chat bot.
And he got an email back from that AI software saying, give us 24 hours and we'll let you know. Then the next day was the same. Give us 24 hours and we'll let you know.
In a statement, Frontier said customers should be able to connect with a real person online. Maybe even faster than you would have been able to on the phone, says airline industry analyst Mike Arnott.
When you call in to an airline customer service agent, that agent is handling one customer at a time.
But when you have agents chatting with people online,
that customer service agent can handle multiple queries through chat all at once.
He says not having a phone option could alienate some customers. But David Slotnick at The Points Guy says chances are it'll work out fine for Frontier.
The low-cost airline model has always been that there's inconveniences or discomfort, but the idea is that people really won't care as long as they're getting the cheapest flight.
Frontier declined to talk for this story. Instead, they sent an email. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
I know a guy who's a screenwriter. He spends his summers writing a Hallmark Home for the Holidays movies. You know him, right? Lots of snow and Christmassy sweaters, family drama, till it all ends well. Well, imagine writing them in June and July in L.A., perhaps the antithesis of the holiday vibe. All of that by way of saying the holiday season starts earlier each and every year with the decorations and shopping and, yes, those holiday movies. Why so much cinematic fuss over this one time of year, hmm? Marketplace's Kristen Schwab is on it.
Juliette Giglio is a Christmas fanatic. Like the kind who puts up four trees every year, each with its own theme. Which makes sense, because she's in the Christmas business. She's co-written a bunch of holiday films with her husband, Keith. There's A Very Nutty Christmas.
That's where Melissa Joan Hart finds a nutcracker who comes to life, and she falls in love with him.
Hello, nutcracker. You're going to help me get through the holidays, huh?
At your service.
She wrote Dear Christmas, which also stars Melissa Joan Hart. And Christmas Reservations.
And that also stars Melissa Joan Hart.
And that's part of the holiday movie trope, right? Stars reappearing in straight-to-TV film after straight-to-TV film, usually Christmas-themed, though Hanukkah gets sprinkled in here and there. And the storyline is always familiar.
They've got a meet-cute, girl wants boy, girl gets boy, girl loses boy, and at the end, they wind up happily ever after. They're romantic comedies.
Holiday films can be formulaic. Even network executives say so. Amy Winter is head of programming at Lifetime, which is premiering 26 holiday movies this year.
That's part of the comfort and the joy of them. If it wildly diverges from a certain type of plot line, it's not fulfilling the expectation of, hey, I could possibly step away, wrap a present, come back and know what's going on.
These movies are made to be holiday wallpaper, playing in the background while people bake cookies and decorate their homes. The business strategy is quantity.
I don't think we're ever not working on Christmas. It's the Super Bowl.
Because the demographic for holiday movies is a coveted advertising group, young women. So networks try to keep their Super Bowl going as long as possible. Lifetime's competitor Hallmark started its Countdown to Christmas movie marathon on October 21st. It's also going for quantity, with 41 new movies, which means the budget is tight. Lisa Hamilton Daly, executive vice president of programming, says each film costs a couple of million dollars, and they're filmed in just a few weeks, usually in a small town that has that Main Street America vibe. Or that's the illusion.
People find like a cute part of Vancouver or, you know, some other Canadian town, usually, honestly, and they shoot there a lot.
Canada gives production companies a 25% labor tax break. But just because these movies are inexpensive to make doesn't mean they're easy to make. Filming often happens during summer when there's no snow.
There is a lot of fake snow used, different kinds. Some of it is just literally blankets.
Other trade secrets? Actors tuck ice packs into their parkas so they don't overheat while sitting around the campfire in 80-degree weather. And cold winter breath is added in post-production. Daly says all these workarounds are worth it because seasonal content is becoming a bigger piece of the network strategy.
Fall has become a thing in the last, you know, few years with like pumpkins. We had a movie called Pumpkin Everything that did really well for us. And so we're looking at doing more like really seasonal movies.
Stay tuned for Loveuary, Hallmark's month-long celebration of Valentine's Day, because for every season, there is now movie wallpaper. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, you can go ahead and put this into your own inflation calculator. You've got one, right? Anyway, IKEA, the originally Swedish but now Swedish-Dutch home goods maker of products with made-up but vaguely Scandinavian-sounding names. Anyway, it said today that it's planning to lower its consumer prices because its input costs have gone down. I don't know if Jay Powell is an IKEA shopper. Probably not, actually. But the Fed chair is set to speak on Wednesday. We will, of course, let you know if he says anything interesting. All right, here's your moment of economic context. It is numerical today. That number is 2,560,623 people. That is how many people went through TSA checkpoints yesterday, making it the busiest air travel day in this economy since 2019. It also means that this program is now officially done with using that particular metric as a barometer of the commercial aviation economy. Kind of like the end of an era, huh? Our daily production team, they do some digital too, but it's mostly daily, includes Anis Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Giang, Maria Honhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.